Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the April 12 edition of Commodity Week. USDA tried to balance the grain stocks report in this week's WASDE figures. Did it do the job, and does it matter? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with John Bondurant, the Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists today in studio include Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us and all of our agricultural information online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Chip Nellinger, it seems I've been awfully patient, at least on the air, waiting for corn planting to begin. Is the delay yet something to be concerned about?
Well, I think the tension's building. I think the next 10 days, 2 weeks are going to be critical to answering that question. If, and this is a big, big if we can get some warmer weather, actually I see the rains that we've had in the heart of the Corn Belt over the last week as bearish. You know, that some really dry areas out west got good rain. In the eastern Corn Belt, we're sitting good if it warms up and dries out and we get a window. So I think the next 10 days are going to tell more of the story.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Well, I can tell you that almost every person you talk to is talking about soil temperature, so I'd have to say the concern is certainly there. I did do a little surveying myself today. I talked to some people here in central Illinois, central Indiana. They're about 45, 46 degrees, four inches down. Central Nebraska, 39 degrees. And if you go into central Kansas, you're looking at 30 degrees. And so I think what the key is, more than warm temperatures during the day, we need warmer temperatures at night. These cold, moist conditions that we're in at this point in time just keep taking the cold down and keeping it down. So it's not stopping some guys. I've heard of some guys that have planted some early maturity corn right around here in Illinois.
And Matt Bennett.
You know, with my farmer hat on, I guess, the cold, wet soils, that's what's most concerning, just like Jackie's alluding to here. You know, if we get started a little bit late, it's not such a bad thing, especially if we can get things to warm up just a little bit. It's nice to be able to come in later in the planting season and actually have a good uniform stand if we do get warm. I'm like Chip, though. You get west of Mississippi, and that's been the talk for quite some time. People are really worried about dryness out west, and, you know, we might end up prolonging the drought. I think if we go ahead and get a decent planting window, and we warm up across the heart of the Midwest, which, you know, I think that remains to be seen. But if we do that, I think that it looks like it's a little bit more of a bearish situation because the drought has subsided somewhat.
Things to consider for the week. Let's stay with the weather Friday. Well, at least what's been brewing out west and up north finally came to a head at the grain exchanges. Minneapolis spring wheat led that charge higher. The crop has suffered drought, freezes, late winter snows. One of these days, I guess we'll kill it. Do you suppose we'll find that day sometime next week, Jackie?
Well, I think it's coming. I talked to a number of the guys in Kansas and Nebraska today. Across Nebraska, all you hear pretty much is we've got wheat that's about 2 inches tall. And the agronomists are out there telling them, you'll get a yield, but you may only get about 50% of your normal yield. So they normally get 60 in that area, so, you know, 30 wouldn't be unrealistic. But when you go into Kansas, they're not in the boot stage yet. And I always thought everything was fairly safe until they were in the boot stage. They told them 16 degrees for 8 hours will kill the plant. They were at 14 degrees for 18 hours. And so they have no idea, and that's a very large area out in the western part of our out in Kansas. And so we don't know where we stand on that. And I'd just like to follow up on what Matt said on moisture. When you look at last year, and I have some charts that Reuters put out and Landworth, we got a tremendous amount of water at this time of year. We came into the year in most of the United States lower than the average from 2002 through 2011. And going into this spring season right here, in many of these states, we haven't even gotten back to where we were for last year. And we had very significant rains in some of the states until we got into the May time frame. So I think to call the drought off because we've had a lot of rains in this area is way premature. And I think there's a lot of problems that still exist out there if we do not get good, timely, consistent rain.
You want to follow up on wheat or on drought?
How about the wheat? I agree with what Jackie said. I think that we're still assessing the freeze damage. There's more to come. You know, those crop conditions actually went up on this past Monday.
Yep.
We've had two freezes since then that really haven't been reflected in those crop conditions. So that's still coming. I think you have to be a little cautious, though, because we have had a nice bounce. Some of that's already in the market, but that crop's going the wrong direction out there. And that could give us a little bit of support for corn in the long term. The moisture situation, I agree. You know, what we didn't have last year was timely rains. We can still raise a big crop, still with the long-term moisture being below average. But like Jackie said, they have to come in a timely manner, and that's critical, you know, May through August.
Matt, let's do the WASDE report. April usually isn't all that exciting for that report, but we don't often have a limit move after the March 1 grain stocks report. So the World Agricultural Outlook Board did the calculations, and they managed to temper the end of March numbers. The corn ending stocks figure now at 757 was just up 125 million bushels. Just, I say. It seems to leave a little wiggle room for more corn to show up this summer. What do you think?
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, initially, obviously, people say 400 million bushels were found just a few days before, and then we come out and we add 125 to it is all we add. But I think it kind of shows, as far as I was concerned earlier on, I was kind of wondering how they were coming up with the 600 and then the 636. And I think it's a little bit tighter than what people are giving it credit for. I do know that while basis levels really aren't reflecting it, I know that there's tightness out in the countryside, especially in certain areas. Processors are calling a little more often than maybe what they would, even though their basis levels haven't changed. I know that they're interested, and I know that the June-July time frame is a bit of a concern for some people.
Well, I think when you look at yeah, if you look at the board, if you take into account what happened on the grain stocks report and now with the USDA report this week on supply and demand, but you look at the board is still saying it's bull spreading, and it's bull spreading. And you know, it's on corn and beans both. It's telling me we want your grain. We want it now. We're not going to pay you to hold it. We want it now. And, you know, the fact that we didn't really see any benefit or any very big benefit to the end user who wanted to buy grains after that report, that made a big difference. But I thought was interesting on the supply-demand report this week was what they did on the world side of things. You know, had they not messed with the world, we would have probably seen corn go up to where we were on the open and continue to climb. But when you look at the world, they increased the carry-in from 11-12 on corn, on beans, and on wheat. And on wheat, they did it at almost 3 million metric tons. Now, that made a huge difference. And the other thing that I still haven't figured out is they reduced wheat feeding by 5 million metric tons, but they increased other by 4 million metric tons. It was just a shift in, but when the trade looks at it, they're going to look more closely at feeding, you know, and the implications that they say the USDA is trying to tell us from this report. And so I think it's going to be just amazing. We still are very tight. 53 days of corn in the world. You know, lowest in 43 years, according to Doc, 88 days on beans in the world. 88 days on beans in the world is not a huge amount, and 98 days on wheat. Those are numbers that are extraordinarily tight. We're walking the line. We better have a good crop.
Let's stay in the United States with the WASDE report just a bit longer. I wonder, do you think there can really be a 50 million bushel increase in ethanol consumption as based off the WASDE figures?
Well, I think if you look at the numbers and the margins, it would suggest that that's probably accurate. So I think still the question's the feed side. But, I would agree with the ethanol based on the numbers we see right now. But I take a step back and I look, and I'm a little concerned with the reaction, the price action after the release of that report. Don't disagree. You know, the bull spreads are still working. Basis is still pretty good. We're still tighter than a year ago on stocks, even though we've found some additional basis that stocks report. But, you know, the funds are still long corn. They're still long beans. And we're under all the major moving averages. And that concerns me. So I think the funds typically are technical traders, not fundamental. I think they may be stuck a little bit with some of those positions. And any rally we do see, I think, is going to be met with pretty heavy fund selling as they continue to get out of those stale long positions.
Well, what did you want the market to do that it didn't do? Did you want it?
I would have liked to have seen, a 20, 30 higher type close instead of, you know, a higher close and then a 10-minute reversal that takes us 30 off the highs. But end of the week, still had good gains on old crop corn, old crop beans. That's the name of the game. We're going the right way. I just am a little cautious about getting too bulled up, back to the $8 type stuff.
In fact, May corn was up 29.5 cents at the end of the week, settled at 658.5, had a high at 666.75. I swear they aim for 666 just to see who it is that doesn't like that number. Low is at 627.5 because it shows up all the time in the marketplace when you can get there. I went back and I looked on the lead option last year, 629.75 for the ninth day of April, but ninth that week anyway, and we fell until May 29th to $5.51.5. That was for the lead option corn. December corn this week, 550, up 15 cents. Wheat futures finished up 15.75 at 714.75 in the May. July at 719.5, we're up 15.25. May beans this week, $14.19 the high, the low at 13.56. A settlement price there at 14.13. They were up 51.25 cents. Again, May beans at $14.13. Last year at this time, 14.36.75, and they fell until May 29th. That's when they bottomed, or the week of, 13.44.25 then. November beans, 12.31.75, were up 3.75 for the week. Soybeans, the ending stocks for beans remained at 125 million. But unlike corn, where the stocks-to-use ratio has widened a bit, it's now 6.8%, the soybean stocks-use ratio is just 4%. Is it okay for me to call that astoundingly tight?
It's by all means okay, and I will tell you, when you look at this bean market and you look how impressive it is on the front months, and then you look and see what some of these processors, now granted, the basis levels aren't improving a whole lot, but I can tell you from a cash grain perspective, there's people out there hunting beans, and they're hunting beans big time. And I will say that, you know, guys might want to be a little bit patient because, just because a posted bid goes off 5 or 10 cents, that doesn't mean that they're not going to be able to do a little bit better than that down the road. But beans are tight, and there's really no way around it. I mean, we're basically, our commitments are right where the exports are called to be. You know, what are we going to do from this point forward? Obviously, I think we're going to end up overdoing it just a little bit. And so, I don't know. There's nothing to say other than astoundingly tight. You hit it on the head.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And they even had to play with the numbers to keep it at 125 with that residual number. Mm-hmm. You know, it likely should have been lowered to about 100 million bushels. So they're playing games to keep it where it's at. Incredibly tight. Basis and the spreads, though, are going to help ration things. So I don't want to throw a bunch of water on or be called the wild bear, but we still have a big South American crop that's coming online, and it's going to get exported. And, you know, if it stays wet like this, we could maybe switch a few acres out of corn to beans. I'm cautious on new crop, but old crop, incredibly tight, could be setting up for some wild fireworks into this, first notice day of the May contract.
Well, there's no question about it. You talked about the fact that we're close on sales. My goodness, we have 91% already shipped. You know, and we're only at week 32, And so we have a long ways to go on this. And I was shocked. I'm along with Chip. I was really surprised in the way that they handled it, and I've never seen them lower the seed usage the way that they did this time. I just don't think we'll ever see them take us down to 100 million. I think it would make us an unreliable exporter, and we don't want to be in that position. But NOPA crush is going to have a big impact again. You know, that'll be coming out this week, Monday. I think, you know, I am mildly bearish on beans just in probably the next 6 weeks or so. And then I think I could see very much the same type of formation that we had for last year. The trade's going to look at it. If we get planting, when we get on the land, we know we can hammer it in fast. It'll come up fast because we'll be later in the year. We'll have warmer days. And I do think, you know, that we will see some real push on that new crop beans. But I think after that, the reality is going to come in. I don't care how big the crop is in South America. They have terrible infrastructure situations.
You're listening, of course, to Commodity Week. I'm ULI Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Jackie Vakes, who you just heard, Chip Nellinger, and Matt Bennett. When we come back, we'll talk with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. A couple of other items, the June contract and the live cattle down 75 at $120.75. Feeders at 140.92.5 were 337.5 lower.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. So far, April has been slightly cooler than average in northern Illinois and slightly warmer than average in central and southern Illinois. Precipitation has ranged from over 3 inches in northwest Illinois to just under an inch in southeast Illinois. In general, Interstate 70 is the dividing line between above-average rainfall to the north and below-average rainfall to the south. The latest U.S. Drought Monitor now shows that Illinois is completely free of abnormally dry conditions for the first time since March 20th of last year. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday will range from the upper 40s in northern Illinois to the upper 50s in southern Illinois. Lows Saturday night will range from the low 30s in the north to the upper 30s in the south. Sunday will be warmer with highs in the 60s in far northern Illinois and in the low 70s across the rest of the state. A cold front will push through the state on Monday and Tuesday, bringing cooler temperatures and a chance of rain each day. This will be followed by a strong low pressure system that will sweep up from the southwest with more opportunities for rain through Friday. Rainfall totals could range from 1 to 2 inches or more across the state. Daytime highs are expected to range from the 50s in the north to the 70s in the south during the week. Nighttime lows are expected to range from the 30s in the north to the 50s in the south. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the April 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Matt Bennett, Chip Nellinger, and Jackie Vakes on the phone line. John Bondurant from Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. John, thank you so much for taking the time with us. Usually at this time, we always ask you what you did with your planting, and you're always through. How about this year?
Not through. My farm in Arkansas, we finished corn planting. In Mississippi, which is south of my Arkansas farm, heavier soil types, 5% planted, and got 4 inches of rain yesterday. So we're behind.
Did you make any different marketing decisions in March or February that changed what your mix was for planting?
No. Don't have any cotton pickers, so it's just more or less beans and corn, and our consultants think that we don't have any drop-off in yields until May 5th, so hopefully we'll find a window.
Well, you sound like a Midwest farmer now.
I know it. I know it. I never thought of I should be planted 2 weeks ago.
John, I think you mentioned there about cotton pickers. Interesting. If the weather keeps up as it is, cool, wet, I've talked to some people down there, and they still have some. Is cotton more in the mix? Is there still time there? What if you have to switch out of corn? What's it go to?
Well, mainly soybeans, but cotton's in the mix. There's still pickers left. The trouble is a lot of us have sold our pickers off, and we're just not going to go out and buy a $650,000 cotton picker, which you may use 1 year and not use for 2 or 3 years. So it's probably more soybeans, but the price of cotton coming up is taking some of the big cotton producers that still have pickers are going back or coming more to cotton and less to corn. We hear talk of maybe a 300,000 to 500,000 drop in corn acreage in the Delta because of the wet weather and the cotton price going up. So.
Well, John, you just answered the question I was going to ask you because you had been saying 4 million more acres, so you said 300,000 to 500,000 acres less. Let's take a stab at what your look is on money flow going in and out, and what your thoughts are as far as the impact that could have going forward from here.
Money flow. Well, three or 400,000 acres in the scheme of things is no big deal. I worry a lot about. I think the thing that's most worrisome in the whole deal is not talked about at all, but corn exports are a disaster, and they're going to stay that way because we're getting Brazil with a big crop, and the Ukraine's coming in, and Europe's coming in. The corn prices around the world have protracted acreage, and we've lost market share. I'm not sure that corn exports next year are much over 1,200. Which means probably that our usage base for next year is 12.25 max, which is not very attractive.
Can I ask you a question, John? You know, in reference to what you just said on exports, how much weight do you give to the fact that it's very well known that we have very little corn to export, and some rather questionable quality corn? You know, like when you're blending aflatoxin.
Probably so, but if you think back to last summer and fall, we kind of fell off on exports because Brazil had a big crop. Well, this year's Brazil crop is even bigger. And I just think people have found other things to use, planted in their local areas. So I'm worried about corn exports a lot.
John, whenever you look forward here and you're talking, you know, we talk to producers, all of us do, and, you know, we're sitting in a situation where we're just a little bit under the insurance price, but yet we see that if we go ahead and open up this planting window, if we come in with a good forecast over the weekend, obviously this market could get hit pretty good. What do you tell a producer who is trying to figure out what to do that maybe feels like he's behind on his sales? Because, boy, there's a lot of guys in that boat right now.
Well, I've got the insurance on some of it. Some of it I don't, but I'm 100% hedged, whatever that means. That people aren't comfortable with that, but I look at it as we can make an awful lot of money at current price levels. And I could foresee, like you say, if things open up and we have a good crop, I could foresee a 3 billion bushel carryout next year. And that would just, you know, I think that's sub $4 corn. So I would say, hedge, be sure to, if you got the crop insurance, that's a big help. And the stuff that's not insured, I'd be hedged. I just think you got to do it. But we're in a different situation down here. We have a ton of irrigation. You don't. So that always plays into your mindset.
Referencing what you just said, a lot of guys are looking forward, wondering if we do have an enormous crop, what their options might be as far as maybe protecting their 14 crop, just simply because one question I keep asking my guys is, what do you think your insurance price is going to be next year? Because it could be significantly different from this year. Do you have any advice there?
I'm hedged a little bit of 14 corn, and I think I'm thinking more and more about it. If we have a planting window or open up a little bit, I would jump all over December 14 because it's still a good price, $550-ish in that area.
We talked, John, about the really tight stocks-to-use ratio for soybeans in the front end of this particular program. What do you think about that and marketing opportunities?
I think the thing that bothers soybeans, if you look at the world carryover at 24%, that is by no means a bullish carryover number. That you can look at the past decade of sub-24% soybeans, and gosh, you can get some awfully low prices and awfully low high prices. So if South America's crop is as advertised, and I think it more or less is, the logistics are going to work itself out, and we could have a big collapse in usage going forward in the U.S., and it will probably last for a good long while. Clearly, we're in a bad situation, very, very tight right now. But if they work this thing out, our export sales for the next 6 to 8 months could be really hurt because this is a big carryover. 24% is not a small carryover.
Can I follow up with you for just a second on that? Is it, because you said if they work their infrastructure problems out, is it an infrastructure problem in the United States as well and in terms of competition?
I don't know that we got an infrastructure problem. In what sense?
Well, I was thinking that we haven't updated our lock and dam system.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. But still, I mean, it's worlds better than South America. Worlds better. So, you know, I don't... They got to get the stuff to the port. They're going to eventually get it to the port, and they're getting that way. And once it's at the port, it's going to move out of there. And as it moves out of there, I would presume that with the carrier as large as it on a world basis, that the U.S. market share will fall a lot. And it's an odd situation. I mean, we've got an extremely tight old crop situation and what could be a depressing 6 or 8 months ahead of us.
John, what kind of price targets to the downside do you have, particularly for new crop soybeans?
I don't know. I'm not as bearish on them as I am on corn, but maybe $10 or $11. But if things go right, it could easily break 10.
John, I was going to ask you, you know, you mentioned that that you're irrigated down there. And one thing I think that we haven't talked about very much in the news or hasn't been paid much attention to by the trade is we've got a lot of people out in Nebraska, Kansas, and the areas that are irrigated that have been cut down to one-third of the water that they were allowed to use last year. What kind of an impact would that have on you?
No, well, our water table is fine. There's no impact on us. It would have an impact on price, but... We have plenty of water, and the water table is only 100 feet or so down in this particular area, 100 to 100
feet. What I was really asking you, John, was if that happened to you, if you were in that position and you only had one-third the water that would normally be available.
I'd be panicked.
Okay, and that's not an uncommon issue.
I know it. It's a real issue. And that's it. But on the other hand, if you have a normal crop, Jackie, we're looking at 3 billion bushel carryout, and you can imagine what that does.
Chip asked about downside on beans. I'm going to ask about downside on corn. Part of the reason is crop insurance. If you got 85%, your level is 480 of 565. So what's your downside price target?
If we hit a decent crop and we have a 3 billion carryover, I think we're going under 4, maybe 3.5.
John, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report, rather commodity week on this 12th day of April. Let's get a final word from our panelist in studio, Chip Nellinger.
Well, we talked a lot about the risk, potential downside risk. These markets for the last 5 years have lulled us to sleep thinking if we do nothing, they'll always come back. If we raise big to average crops, to large trend line yield crops, it's going to hurt the end result as we go lower. So get the tools available, and there's ways to manage your risk.
Jackie Vakes.
You may not think you have much in common with Bill Gates, but he had a great, great quote, and he said, you know, success is a terrible teacher. It lulls you into thinking you can never lose.
And Matt Bennett.
I'm going to go along with Chip and say we need to set some floors in place, know what your cost of production is, and do a good job of protecting whatever profits that you can make.
That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.